I'm Michael Kist of Bleeding Green Nation, and I invite you, gentle listener, to join us for the best analysis of the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles in the business. BGN Radio provides you with the most informative preview shows, and the Kist and Solak show dives deep into all the scheme and X and O details you could ever want. Plus discussions with the industry's brightest minds, including former NFL players, and press conferences from the Eagles coaching staff to keep you up to date and informed every step of the way. Subscribe to Bleeding Green Nation today. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Listen up, fantasy baseball friends. Did you know that your chances of winning on draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? That's why you need to try Draft. No more getting crushed by the pros. More than 1 million people have already downloaded Draft. Play in a real live MLB draft right now. Be done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use the promo code Felsky. That's right, play in a real money draft for free just by using the promo code Felsky, F-E-L-S-K-E. But it gets even better. Draft is so sure you'll love it, they're even offering Hittin' Season listeners a money-back guarantee of up to $100. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and play free right now with the promo code Felsky. Void where prohibited, must be 18 or older. See website for details. Offer must be redeemed within 14 days.
Playing a long drive! There it is! Number 500! The career 500th home run for Michael Jack Smith!
Rui slides! Rollins has won it! They stream out of the dugout! Yeah. Rollins by yeah. Near third! This game is over!
It is out of here! 50th home run of the year for Ryan Howard.
Ruiz out to get it. The throw from his knees. It's in time. And it's a no-hitter. Unbelievable. Ruiz and
Howard. Oh, Chase is going to keep going. And he's safe at home plate.
Wow.
Chase Utley, you are the man. Swing and a miss. Struck him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
Now batting for the Phillies, second baseman John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 200. 200 episodes of the podcast. Man, from the dark days of 2015 until now, it has been a long ride, everybody. But my name is John Stolness, of course, from The Good Fight and NumberFire.com. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. You can also follow this show on Facebook and Instagram as well. And thank you so much for those of you who have been there from the beginning and those of you who have jumped on board along the way. My thanks to all of you who listen every single week and whenever we do bonus podcast episodes and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, milestone podcasts, I like to try and make a big splash as far as guests are concerned. You'll remember for episode 100 last year, we had general manager Matt Klentak on the show, and this year we've got another huge guest. Joining me to help celebrate episode number 200 of the podcast is Phillies manager Gabe Kapler. Gabe, obviously off to a great start here with the Phillies in the first half, and it's an honor to talk to him. Gabe, thank you so much for coming on Hittin' Season. How are you, sir?
Honored to be a part of episode 200, man. That's really cool. Glad to be a part of it.
Thanks. Yeah, you know, I started this in the dark days of 2015, man. So it's been a walk through the wilderness, but it's really fun to follow this team right now. And obviously, you know, you've got them playing really well. The players are doing well. Teams exceeded expectations in the first half. I know, looking at the standings from the All-Star game last year to the All-Star game this year, you guys are the most improved club in baseball. And so, I guess the first question I have for you is, did you expect to be here at the beginning of the season? Did you expect to be a team that could battle for the division lead for first place when you guys started in Clearwater?
John, I did. And I talked to our guys in spring training this year, and I said, look, the men in this room, the people in this clubhouse right now, I believe can win a lot of baseball games. I believed in the talent in the room. I believe in the front office. Matt Klentak is a special kind of general manager. And I believe in the organization in general. And so there's no surprises here. Certainly a lot of our young players needed to take steps forward, which they did. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're sitting here today. Vince Velasquez has been a whole lot better than he was in 17. Nick Pivetta has taken some huge steps forward. Jake Arrieta's addition was enormous. Obviously Aaron Nola is basically what he was last year, one of the best starters in Major League Baseball. And I obviously could go on and talk about our roster and our lineup and our players. They're the ones who have put us in this position, and I absolutely believed in them then, and I believe in them now.
Yeah, and you mentioned mostly the starting pitchers there, Zach Eflin as well. I think the starting pitching has really been the main driving force behind your success here in the first half. And you mentioned Velasquez and Pivetta and really the emergence of Aaron Nola. I think watching him in the All-Star game last night, what he did was pretty incredible, but it's what we've seen from him all season long, the emergence of a guy who's turned into an ace number one starting pitcher. When he came out of college, a lot of people pinned him as a middle of the rotation guy. But I mean, how often is it that we see a player emerge from college and improve his stuff so drastically, pick up a mile and a half an hour on his fastball, develop a changeup, a pitch that he can throw to left-handers that's a real weapon? How often do you see a pitcher do what Aaron Nola has done in the last couple of years?
Well, what I find most fascinating is that it's being talked about this season as an emergence when it clearly has been happening right under our noses and people just haven't been talking about it enough.
Right.
I mean, if you go back and you look at his numbers from 2017, they're really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously he's having his best season yet this season, but part of that is just natural development. It's not like this guy just, you know, developed overnight and we have what we have.
Right.
He's always been creative. He's always had one of the best curveballs in baseball. The changeup is getting better, as you mentioned. So we're seeing an uptick in velocity from time to time. But this is a guy that performed in college at a very high level, one of the best pitchers in college baseball.
Right.
And all he's done since is gotten better and better. So I just find it kind of interesting when people say, oh, he's a number three starter. I just don't get it. I've never seen anything but top-level stuff from Aaron Nola.
Yeah, that was something your predecessor said at the end of last year, but I think we've seen consistency from Nola this year that, you know, we haven't seen a run of bad starts, and he's really kept the ball in the yard this year. I think the lack of home runs that he's allowed has really helped keep him from having any blow-up innings. And it also seems like we've seen with aces before that if you don't get to Nola in the first inning, once he gets it on cruise control, you're done for the afternoon. Like, if you're going to score on Aaron Nola, you better do it early. Is that a fair assessment?
I think it's really insightful because he does seem to get better and better. And I think as time has gone on and I've seen more of Knowles, I felt more confident in the fifth inning when he goes through a little bit of a struggle. It's like, yeah, this is just part of what he can do that other pitchers can't, which is get out of small jams and not lose the strength in his arm, not lose the consistency of his delivery. And in fact, we've seen in the sixth, seventh, and eighth innings of the game, we've seen his stuff improve. We've seen his strikeouts go up. We've seen him get more focused. So I've never had more confidence than I do right now in Aaron Nola's ability to go deep into games.
Well, Gabe, as we sit here at the All-Star break, we're obviously in the middle of trade deadline season. And as we record this on Wednesday morning, 2 days ago, your team was linked to Manny Machado quite strongly. And it seemed as if he was coming here. All the smoke was heading in that way. And then on Tuesday, that reversed itself. And right now, it seems like he's heading for the Dodgers. And I don't necessarily want to ask you about Machado specifically, although, you know, if you have any thoughts on Machado you'd like to share, that'd be great. But my main question is, at the trade deadline here, in your conversations, which I'm sure you've had with Klentak and with McPhail about ways to improve the team in the second half, I mean, you're fighting for a division lead. It's not just going for a wild card here. Everything we're hearing is that the Phillies are being really aggressive on the trade market. Is that the sense that you get too? And kind of what areas of the team do you think need a little bit more reinforcements in the second half?
My job, John, is to compartmentalize, right? And so, sure, I've had conversations with Matt about how the areas that look like they could use an upgrade on our roster. But my more important job is to take the pieces that we have and put them in the best positions to succeed. So my job is not to look outside our club. My job is to look at our club and think about ways that we can be better in the second half. And that's really where my focus is right now. That's not to say I don't read. I read everything and that I don't know yeah. what's going on. I do know exactly what's happening out in the trade market. But really, my job is to let Matt look under every stone, to trust that he's among the game's best executives, and to understand that our club is going to get better, and that when we get those pieces, our job is to develop them and put them in the best positions to succeed.
Right, and I know the front office has a delicate balance here. I mean, you want to play the season that you have in front of you, and you guys have an opportunity here with, it seems like the Nationals in the first half took a step back, but I think you probably feel the same way. The Nationals probably still have a run in them at some point on the Atlanta Braves.
Oh, there's no question.
They're too talented not to, and with too good of a starting rotation, you feel like Bryce Harper is going to fix himself in some ways. I mean, he's still having a pretty good power season, but regardless, you guys have a real shot at the division here. And so it certainly seems as though we're hearing a lot of names in the trade rumors, but I understand, like, it's in the clubhouse. You guys just kind of need to focus on winning with the group you have, because I imagine if for some reason the Phillies make a lot of offers, but nothing pans out, you still have to win with the guys that are in your clubhouse, which you've done in the first half, right?
There's no question. I mean, we are here today because of the guys that are in that room. And in theory, if our young players continue to take steps forward, we will be better in the second half. And I don't think that's a crazy theory. I think you take the guys that we mentioned in our starting rotation, you look at Scott Kingery, and you can see him getting better and better every single day. Michael Franco is making changes that have allowed him to get better. And this is a guy in his mid-20s.
Yeah.
So if all these guys are just a little bit better in the second half than they were in the first half, well, yeah, now we've got a team that can compete for the division title. I completely agree with your assessment about the Nationals, by the way. If you look back to what the Dodgers did in the early part of 2018, and how the country baseball fans were reacting to that, is like, what's wrong with the Dodgers? Well, if you're not careful, the same thing can happen with the Nationals. This is a team that could very easily be the team that wins the most games in the second half. So therefore, what we have to stay the course. We have to be really strong in our development. We have to be really strong in our strategic decisions. We have to put our players in a position to succeed. And we have to understand that everything has to be optimized for us to win this title.
At this point in the season, Gabe, I saw Jason Stark mention this for The Athletic, and I've seen it in other areas too. I mean, you're the front runner for National League Manager of the Year. And I know you don't probably think about that right now because there's still a whole second half to play. But, you know, given how the first week of the season started out for you and some of the criticism you took, the heat that you took and continue to take from fans who don't really pay close attention, you know, I guess my question is, how did you get through that first week when most of the baseball community and Phillies fans seemed to be lined up against you? How do you fight through something like that?
I think I always remember that success is a group, right? Players help clubs win baseball games. Coaching staffs help clubs win baseball games. Front offices help coaching staffs help teams win baseball games. And it is a group, collective, collaborative effort. So anytime things are going well for us, we're doing a good job as a unit, as a group. From my perspective, you know, I take responsibility when things aren't going well. And that's my job. So as I think about public perception, I just don't pay all that close attention to it. We stay focused in the clubhouse. We keep laser sharp focus on the step right in front of us, which is to beat the Padres on Friday.
Where are some areas the team can and should improve in the second half?
I think that it's just the continued development of our young players. I think that's the number one focus. If Nick Pivetta can attack the strike zone with his curveball like he does on his best outings, he's going to be sensational in the second half. I think if Michael Franco continues to work a little bit deeper counts, get the ball in the air more frequently, you see some more fly balls to the right side relative to the ground balls to the left side. I think we have some gold there potentially. I could go around player for player, but it's really about young players continuing to take steps forward. And our staff continuing to develop as a group and put them in the best positions to succeed.
One of the things that's driven me crazy with some Phils fans that I interact with on Twitter is how quickly fans seem to be willing to give up on young players. And one of those guys, J.P. Crawford, but also you've Scott Kingery and some of the other young guys who, you know, have low batting averages, and that's still what a lot of fans look at, even though the on-base percentage for some guys might be higher. But, you know, how long do you think it's fair to give a player? What's a long enough sample size? How much rope should fans be willing to give a young player like J.P. Crawford? Because it's driving me crazy how many people are ready to throw the dirt on J.P. Crawford's career in a Phillies uniform already.
Well, the first thing I'd say is fans lack of content, when they're unhappy about something, when they're seeing something that bothers them, it's fair. That's what being a fan is all about. It's, you get to be emotional, you get to ride the highs and lows and the ups and downs, and you get to complain about whatever you want to complain about, and it's always justified. That is the cool thing about being a fan. Our job is to just be much more even, much more composed, much more controlled, and much less emotional. J.P. Crawford is a young man. He's got a sweet stroke. He's shown the ability to play both positions on the left side of the diamond and do so at a high level. The on-base skills are there. He has the ability to look over a baseball, and he's still developing. And J.P. is not alone. We have guys all over the diamond. I think we have still have the youngest roster in Major League Baseball, which says we are still a developing group. And so, therefore, our job is to stay much more even about it and not ride the ups and downs.
Do you have a time frame on when he might be back?
I'm not sure how far away JP is at this point, but he's getting his grip strength back. Once his grip strength is fully back, we know that he's going to begin batting practice progressions. And at that point, we can start to really develop a good rehab schedule. He's not far away.
Gabe, last question for you. We're hearing the Players Union says that bringing the designated hitter to the National League is gaining momentum. I've long been an advocate of bringing the DH to the National League, mainly because I've gotten to the point after watching National League baseball for 25, 30 years now, I can't stand watching pitchers hit, Gabe. I just can't. It's something where you see so often pitchers come to the plate with runners on base and two out, and you just know most of the time, the vast majority of the time, a rally is about to die. So I'd like to see the designated hitter. I'd like to see more good hitters in the lineup. But as a National League manager, the current rules really make things a little bit more challenging for you. You have to decide on double switches, when to pull, if you need to pull Aaron Nola early from a game. You've had some decisions on whether you needed to get guys after five innings because you had a potential rally in front of you. And so what do you think about bringing the designated hitter to the NL? Would you like the DH in the NL, or do you like the strategy aspect of the National League?
Well, I'll speak to it in a different way. I'll say this. I don't know what the right decision is about having a DH in the National League or not having a DH in the National League. But to all of your points, it will absolutely change the way we manage baseball games. And it's like almost managing a different game. One of the biggest decisions that we have to make every night when we're down in a game, in the middle of the game, is when to optimize to go for offense, right? Mm-hmm. To get one extra hit, to make sure that we don't give away any outs because we're running out of outs, because we need to score one or two more runs just to be in the game. That goes away entirely. And then you're just managing a bullpen, right? And it's a much easier game to manage when you're not thinking about hitting for the pitcher and when to work for that offense. So I would just say strategically, it's a whole different baseball game. When we go to the American League, I almost feel like something's missing. We go to Baltimore to play the Orioles. There's just so much less to think about. I'm not sure that I like it to be easier, but I think the driving factor in whether or not we should have the DH in the National League is how fans will react. If fans enjoy it more, then I'm all for it.
Well, Gabe, listen, I really appreciate the time. You're doing a fantastic job. The team's in a great position, and I think they've got a good one at the helm, kind of shepherding through this process. And I've said it a bunch of times, you have a really difficult balancing act, you and Matt Klentak and Andy McPhail, because this season, I think, has kind of been, at least from the fans' perspective, a little bit of a surprise that you're in contention. But I know there's still a lot you need to find out and figure out about some of these young players. A tough balancing act, I know, for you when filling out the lineup card and what the decisions that you all have to make here at the trade deadline. But I think you've got the team in first place. It's the most improved team in baseball year over year. There's no other way to describe the first half other than an unmitigated success. So congratulations on the success so far. And thank you again so much for coming on Hitting Season. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And just to clarify, yeah, there's a lot to think about. There's a lot of development still to occur. But our only goal is on winning the National League East. And I think that's where our attention, our focus should be. And that's where it is coming out of the break.
I love that, Gabe. I love it. Thanks so much. Talk to you down the road.
Okay, we'll talk to you later, John.
This ball is out of here!
Well, a couple of things before we wrap up the podcast this week. And folks, It looked like a happy dream was coming true for a little while there, but as it turns out, Manny Machado will not be coming to Philadelphia. As of this recording, the deal has not officially been announced, but it appears as if the Dodgers have swooped in at the last minute and landed Manny Machado from the Orioles. Now, on Monday, every report out there said the Phillies were in the lead. I mean, you had the folks at Barstool Sports going out and saying there was a handshake agreement. Now, we all know that's not a reputable news organization, so you throw that out the window. But there were other people that really seemed to make it clear that the Phillies were in the lead, that it appeared that on Wednesday morning an announcement would be made that the Phillies would get Manny Machado for a deal headlined by their number two prospect, Adonis Medina, who was in the top 100 of many top 100 prospect lists, I think around number 75 in the 70s, 80s. Different organizations have different numbers on Adonis Medina, but clearly a top prospect. And we just heard left and right the Phillies getting aggressive and going after Machado, wanting him now that the calculus had changed because the Phillies were battling for first place in the National League East. But it really got everybody's hopes up, got my hopes up, because here's how I was approaching the Manny Machado stuff. I didn't think it was realistic that we were going to get him. I didn't think the Phillies would pay the price to get Machado. But when it seemed clear that they were being aggressive, that they were going after him, and that it looked like we were going to get him on Monday night, everybody went to bed on Monday night thinking he's ours. And then waking up on Tuesday morning realizing, what? And it's pretty clear that the Orioles were probably, or could, not clear, not pretty clear. It's not definitely clear. But it seems as though the Orioles may have been putting the vibes out there that the Phillies offer, that the deal was imminent in order to get the Dodgers to increase their offer, which is apparently what they did on Tuesday morning. And as you look at the rumored offers that the Phillies have out there with what the Dodgers are offering, there's really not a whole lot the Phillies could do to beat it. Even if they wanted to include Sixto Sanchez in a deal, it doesn't look as though the Phillies have the horses to match up with what the Dodgers have. And the Dodgers, frankly, are more desperate. They need to get back to the World Series this year. Their window is now. And with Corey Seager out at shortstop for the rest of the year, they have an opening. At shortstop, it was a perfect fit, a better fit in Los Angeles than here in Philadelphia. And Philadelphia was a great fit for Manny Machado. I was resigned to the fact we weren't going after Machado. I wasn't feeling bad about it at all that Machado would end up in L.A. or Milwaukee or someplace else. I didn't want him to go to New York. But if he was going to go to L.A. or Milwaukee, that would have been fine with me. Because I was never really one who believed that the Phillies were going to go whole hog on him. But now that we didn't get him, when it seemed as though that we were going to get him, I am disappointed. Especially for a deal with Adonis Medina leading it, I think he's a great prospect, but I'm doing that deal. And we'll see. I don't know if we'll ever know exactly what the Phillies offered. We'll definitely know what the Dodgers offered, and then we can take a look at whether or not the Phillies had the pieces to match something like that. But regardless, that's all water under the bridge. Manny Machado is not going to be coming to Philadelphia, and it's a big disappointment. It is a big disappointment, and I understand fans feeling disappointed, but I'm really hoping fans don't jump off the bandwagon here with Machado going someplace else, because this is a team that has managed to be in first place without Manny Machado for the first half of the season. And there are still other players out there that the Phillies are going to go after. They have been rumored to be going after a number of players. It's clear this team is buying this trade deadline season. They are going to add, and they're going to add pieces that will help. They need help on the left side of the infield still. And they'll probably target shortstop now with Michael Franco playing better. My guess is they're going to want a shortstop, but someone who can play shortstop and or third base would be my guess. And the name we're hearing is Eduardo Escobar from Minnesota. He's having a career year. He's a rental after this year, but he leads all of baseball in doubles, hit playing very well for Minnesota. He would be a rental, and he has been rumored to be on the Phillies' wish list now that Machado has fallen through. We talked last week on the podcast about Whit Merrifield of the Royals, who plays all over the field, steals a lot of bases, has a high batting average. The problem is he hasn't played much shortstop or third base at all. He's mainly a second baseman and outfielder. Although they do say that he can play some third base, he won't play shortstop. That's not a position he can play, and he's going to cost a lot. He is under team control through 2022. He would make the Phillies better in a lot of areas as a high batting average guy, good base stealer, good defensive player, a guy the Phillies would love who can play all over the place. The type of player they imagine Scott Kingery to be is exactly the player Whit Merrifield is. again, he might cost a whole lot, and I don't know where he would play. It just doesn't seem like a great fit. Now, that being said, I don't think the Phillies should go after guys like Mike Moustakas or Josh Donaldson. Moustakas isn't much better than what they have in Michael Franco. Donaldson, if Donaldson was healthy, I'd say great, but he just hasn't been healthy so far this year, and it doesn't seem as though he's going to be healthy the rest of this season. The Phillies have been rumored to be interested in some of the top closers out there, including Zach Britton. Britton would be a rental as well. Might not cost as much as someone like Jeurys Familia, the Mets closer, who they've also been linked to in recent days. And also, Familia has that domestic violence stuff in his past, which I think could just be wise for the Phillies to stay away from. Guys like Brad Hand, Raisel Iglesias, Felipe Vasquez of the Pirates, both young guys under team control for multiple years, would cost more, but they would be big helps in the back of the bullpen. We've also heard the Phillies connected to former Phil J.A. Happ. J.A. Happ, why do I call him J.A.? I know his name is J.A., but whenever I see J.A. Happ written on a paper, I want to say J.A. He's been connected to J.A. Happ, the former Phil, who has had a terrific career, made the All-Star team with the Blue Jays, and actually got the win, got the save last night in the All-Star game. He has an ERA over 4, but he's largely been very good this year. He would be a rental, too. Do the Phillies need another starting pitcher? Not really. They've got 5 starters, really even 6 starters, once Zach Eflin is off the disabled list with his blister. Could they add Happ and go with a 6-man rotation and have somebody like Velasquez or Pivetta? This was floated by Corey Seidman of NBC Sports Philadelphia. Act in the bullpen on their throw days in between starts could give them a lot more flexibility and help out their bullpen in that way by adding a starter. Phillies are also going to be looking for bench guys. It's clear this team needs an upgrade from Jesmuel Valentin. I think Seidman also mentioned, Curtis Granderson as a potential bench piece. That would be a very good bench piece, somebody who can hit for some power and get some big hits coming off the pine. And finally, what about Cole Hamels? Folks, I'd love to have him back if he was really good. And you look at the overall numbers, they're not very good for Hamels this year. But take a look at his home road splits. He has a 2.93 ERA in 10 starts on the road this year, 5.83 in 9 home starts. And since he's gotten to Texas, he's been a much worse pitcher at home than on the road, gives up a ton of home runs in the hitter's ballpark of Arlington. Listen, Philadelphia is also, it also favors the hitters, but not in the same way the Rangers Park does. And Hamels is comfortable pitching in Philadelphia. He knows what it's like to pitch in that ballpark. He knows what to do. He's not the same pitcher he was when he was here before, but I certainly think he's not as bad as his overall numbers would indicate. You look at the home road splits, there's reason to be optimistic that he would be better at home, away from Texas. He strikes out 9.9 batters per 9 on the road, 8 per 9 on, I mean, sorry. He strikes out 9.9 batters per 9 on the road, 8.0 batters per 9 at home in Texas, and he's given up 14 home runs in Texas this year, just 7 away from Arlington Stadium. Now, the other thing about the Manny Machado stuff is being traded to Los Angeles an advantage for the Dodgers to sign him as a free agent after the season? I've seen so many people on Twitter say he's going to the Dodgers and that means he's going to stay with the Dodgers, that he's going to love it in LA. People who go to LA, they always re-sign there. And it's true, that has happened. I think, did Manny Machado re-sign with the Dodgers after being traded there in 2008? I think so. It does happen. But does that mean the Phillies should give up Sixto Sanchez? Because it's possible that Manny Machado will favor LA when he becomes a free agent. He's not going to sign an in-season extension. And I know Yoenis Cespedes was traded to the Mets and then re-signed with the Mets, but it was also because the Mets were giving him more money than anyone else. I still believe that if the Phillies offer Machado more money than anyone else, he's going to come to Philadelphia. I heard Buster Olney and Jerry Krasnick say that on the Baseball Tonight podcast on Wednesday morning. Still betting he's going to come to Philadelphia if the Phillies go after him harder than any other team. And everything you're hearing is that he is going to go after, the Phillies are going to go after him harder than any other team in baseball. So I think he comes to Philadelphia next year. So basically, I think all we're missing out on is 2.5 months of Machado, and he would have helped this year. But I don't think it precludes the Phillies from being the favorites to land him as a free agent. I don't think this makes the Dodgers the favorite to sign him next year, this offseason, this winter. I still think the Phillies have that advantage because I think John Middleton is going to put the full court press on getting Manny Machado to Philadelphia. Maybe I'm wrong. But I know Philly. I know Philadelphia sports fans are all bummed because Kawhi Leonard didn't sign with Philadelphia. That LeBron James chose Los Angeles over Philadelphia. I mean, listen, the Phillies can't control what other teams, what other sports players in other sports are doing with other franchises. They can only control what they do. And it sounds like they made a very aggressive offer for Manny Machado and that he almost came here. Going to Los Angeles, I don't think gives the Dodgers a huge advantage. I don't even know if it gives them any advantage over Philadelphia in the offseason. So that's where we stand with Manny Machado. A couple other things. It was All-Star Week this week, and lost in the shuffle of the Manny Machado madness was Rhys Hoskins and Aaron Nola doing great things in Washington, D.C. Two Phils players represented this week. Nola got the fifth inning of the All-Star game on Tuesday night for the NL and owned the American League Stars, striking out Salvador Perez and Mookie Betts. He did allow a hit to Jose Altuve, but I just think he did that to so that he could get to Mike Trout to set up an at-bat we all loved watching. And it was only a three-pitch at-bat with Trout fouling out to the first baseman, an outstanding performance by Aaron Nola. I wrote about it for The Good Fight. Make sure to check it out. It came out Wednesday morning, Aaron Nola's night in Washington, D.C. Really a terrific outing by him. And Rhys Hoskins in the home run derby, man, he did fantastic, beating Jesus Aguilar, who came in as the number one seed. Hoskins was the number eight seed. Hoskins hit 17 bombs in the first round and then followed that up by becoming the first player in home run derby history to hit 20 in a semifinal round. It seemed for all the world he was going to go on to the finals, but then Kyle Schwarber comes along and hits 21. Nothing you can do about that. You tip your hat to Kyle Schwarber. Just an incredible performance. But really, both Rhys Hoskins and Aaron Nola acquitted themselves extraordinarily well at the All-Star game in the nation's capital this week.
This ball is out of here!
And now it's time for your stat of the week. And here's some real quick Phil's All-Star trivia, courtesy of our resident statistician at The Good Fight, Schmenkman. You can follow him on Twitter at Schmenkman. He noted that this was the fifth year in a row the Phillies have had only one representative in the All-Star game. They had only one in five out of 6 years from 1996 to 2001. That was interrupted by three players going to the game in 1999, Mike Lieberthal, Curt Schilling, and Paul Byrd. Love that Paul Byrd year. The last time the Phillies went at least five in a row with only one were the 6 years that they sent someone, only one person, from 1968 to 1973. And in the first four of those years, 1968 to 71, their lone representative didn't even get to play in the game. So they went 5 years from July of 1967 to July of 1972 without a single Philly appearing in the All-Star game. And in that 1972 appearance, after a five-year absence, Steve Carlton, having one of the greatest seasons by a pitcher in Major League history, was the Phils' representative in that All-Star game. And by the way, I still love every team having at least one representative in the All-Star game. As a kid, I used to wait up to see which Phillies representative, and most times it was Mike Schmidt who was voted into the All-Star game, but I always used to wait up to see every Philly get in the game. And I still think that's a cool thing for young sports fans introduced to the game to see their favorite player or a player representing their favorite team getting into the All-Star game, even if it's a relief pitcher like Pat Nashak last year getting into a ball game in the sixth, seventh, or eighth innings and without really having much of an impact on the game. It's still just great to see guys in Phillies uniforms playing with, among, and against the best in the best. Folks, that'll do it for this edition of Hittin' Season, episode number 200. Once again, my profound thanks to Phillies manager Gabe Kapler for coming on the podcast this week. If you haven't done so, gang, make sure to head over to Apple Podcasts and subscribe to Hittin' Season, subscribe to The Dirty Inning, and become a Patreon member of Hittin' Season by going to patreon.com/hittinseason, where you will get an extra episode of Hittin' Season every single week, as well as an episode of Continued Success, hosted by Liz Rocher and Justin Clue, my partners on Sunday night at the Hittin' Season, and my great colleagues from The Good Fight. Make sure to go to thegoodfight.com for the best Phillies coverage anywhere in the world. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you all next time right here on Hittin' Season.
Hey, everybody, how you doing? Well, that's good. My name is Bill Matz. I am the director of Fun and Games for Broad Street Hockey Radio Podcasts.
And I am Kelly, the deputy managing editor of BroadStreetHockey.com.
I'm Steph Driver, the NHL editorial manager for SB Nation.
And I am Charlie O'Connor, lead Flyers writer for TheAthletic.com.
And together we make up BSH Radio, one of the shows that you get at the SB Nation podcast family. We have a lot coming to you this year, and we want you to listen to our show. It is just an all flyers, all the time show, so much content. I really hope you listen to it. It is a great piece of the SB Nation podcast family, along with all your other favorite sports.
We all love hockey, specifically the Flyers.
Let's go the Flyers.
The hockey team, the Flyers.